Well, good morning. It is a wonderful morning to be here. If you want to go ahead and stay in that book of Solomon, we are going to the Song of Solomon. We're going to be there today, and we're going to be looking at that particular song throughout its entirety, but we're going to really focus in on those two verses that Joshua read for us so well. I am, again, glad to be here this morning. I know the weather has affected some of us being able to get out, and we want to make sure we are conscious of them, whether it be flooding or whatever it may be. I know also there is a little bit of ick going around, so I am thankful for everybody here. I'm thankful for everybody who is tuning in, watching at home, staying safe. And again, what a wonderful morning it is. And wow, Tennessee weather is wild. I just want to just say that. That was impressive the past 2 days. I hope everybody was able to stay safe, but whoo, I never thought it would stop. So I am glad this morning we have no rain and we were able to come into the building without being just totally drenched upon. So again, I'm so thankful to be here. We're continuing this entire series on momentum throughout the year. And in February, we have been focusing on having momentum in our marriages. Now, also, if you have noticed throughout these sermons so far that Travis kicked us off with at the beginning of the month of February, and as we have continued throughout, these principles that we're teaching not only are wonderful and awesome for our marriage and our relationships, but more importantly, for our friendships, for people who we have relationships within the church. These are wonderful principles to apply to our lives as a whole. And that's why we have been presenting these as well. And we really want to encourage our marriages. I want to encourage my marriage as well. And so that's why we're spending this month talking about gaining momentum in our marriages. Tonight, we're going to be having another worship devotional service in our fellowship hall, followed by a panel discussion with two couples in the congregation. And we're going to be talking to them and asking them about different aspects of their marriage and what has made it today. And so we want to encourage you to come back this evening when we will be in the fellowship hall for that time. Now, not so long ago, I was blessed with an opportunity to go and officiate a wedding for this young couple. Now, this young couple was getting married out in Oklahoma, and so when they asked me to do it, I was like, okay, sure, I would love to come back. And what was so cool is we left from here to drive out there, all the floods of memories from when Heather and I got married came to my mind. Now, I had 15 hours to think about all those wonderful memories. And what's so cool is that from where we're standing right here, this couple was married about 5 miles from where Heather and I were married. And so as we're driving out there and I'm thinking about all of these wonderful memories, I can't help but remember how we got married in the middle of July in Oklahoma, okay? You think Tennessee weather is crazy. Just go out to Oklahoma for a little while. If you say, I'm getting married in the middle of July in Oklahoma, people look at you like you're crazy. Because most of the time, it's 110 degrees. But God blessed us that day. It was about 80 degrees with a slight breeze, and it was just beautiful. And I remember about some of those hectic memories, too. If you've had a wedding day, you probably remember some of those days. And some of those memories as well, as we're trying to get everything situated and put out and making sure all the families have coordinated with each other and where they're staying and where they're going, because Oklahoma is 18 hours from where Heather and I are from. So all the families are coming out there and to be with us. But some of the most wonderful memories I have are getting to witness my bride come down the aisle. All the persuasion, all the sweet talking, I don't know how I did it, but it had all come to that day and that moment. And what a wonderful memory it is. And as we jump back to this couple, and as we think about their day, Jake and Sierra, and as they were beginning their love throughout the ceremony, there we came to that time where we start talking about vows, right? And what vows are is they're a promise. I promise this particular thing to you. And so what we did is I had them repeat after me these particular vows. I, Jake, take you, Sierra, to be my wife, to love and to cherish, to protect and to honor, to provide for and support from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, so long as we both shall live. And I also had Sierra look at Jake and repeat these words after me. I, Sierra, take you, Jake, to be my husband, to love and to cherish, to honor and to respect, to help and support from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, so long as we both shall live. Now I had them say these words, and what this was them promising each other, I am going to do this in our life. I am going to love you. I am going to cherish you. I am going to respect you. I am going to honor you. I am going to provide for you. I am going to support you for our entire lives. Whether we go through times of struggle in our finances, whether we are doing well, whether our savings account is full and we are doing well financially, I promise all of those things. I promise all of those things. If you get sick or if I get sick, I promise to keep those promises. Isn't that a wonderful thing? To think about those vows that we said to our spouse. To think about those moments where we got to say, I do. And sometimes officiants in wedding services will just say, here's these vows, and all I want you to do is say, I do at the end. And we make those promises that we are going to keep these particular promises to each other. I wonder if you can remember back to the day that you said, I do, that you made these vows, and maybe you're here today and you didn't use those traditional vows. You came up with your own and were creative. I just want to tip my hat to you. That is awesome. Because my mind, when I was thinking about creating my own vows, oh my, and having to say them in front of 50 people, yeah, right. Now, it's kind of ironic with the profession I've chosen for the rest of my life. But what we're doing through these vows is again, we are entering into this covenantal agreement with each other that I promise to do all of these things no matter what life has to throw at us. And I want you to think about those I do's. And what's interesting is sometimes those I do's become I don'ts. We start having life happen. We start having kids. We start having activities to involve ourselves with. We start having family functions to involve ourselves with. We start having all of these vacations. We start having work. We start having real life, right? And those I do's, those promises we've made, turn into I don'ts. Well, throughout this lesson today, I want to encourage us to let those I do's always stay I do's. To let our love and our promises that we made to our spouse be at the forefront of our mind, that we can remember them and act on them and do them. I want us to be able to make sure we rekindle that flame that we had when we were going through that time of dating and courtship and guys, when we were trying to persuade the woman who was way out of our league to be our spouse. I want us to go back to that time where we're trying to do everything we possibly can to show our love and affection towards our spouses. Now, I want to ask you a question. Think about this candle for a second. How easy would it be to walk up and blow this candle out? Pretty easy, right? Now, how easy would it be to walk up and blow this bonfire out? Very hard, impossible, right? We could probably take everybody in this particular room and try to blow out this bonfire and we wouldn't be able to. I remember when we were living in our house in Alabama, We had bought a piece of property that had just been clear cut. And if you've ever been around a recent clear cut, they just decide to leave all the extra stuff out there. And so we were burning these massive piles of lumber, of wood, of trees, of slash, of all this trashed wood that was out there. And what was so amazing is when you got that fire going, good luck ever stopping it. Because we would start one, or I was so scared of wildfires from being out, living out in Oklahoma, so I would find out when it was about to downpour like it has been the past 2 days, and I would set that thing on fire. It didn't matter how much it rained. It didn't matter how much the wind blew. That fire would never go out. That's what I want our marriages to be. I don't want our relationships and our marriages to be like the single candle flame, where just a hint of wind can come by and all of a sudden, boom, it's out. And sometimes our marriages and our relationships with people get that way. But what I want us to do is encourage us and have us think about how we can build a mighty fire in our marriages and in our life. And so that's why we're going to turn to the book of Solomon, the Song of Solomon. And we're going to study throughout this particular lesson. And as you start turning over there and you go to chapter 1, I want you to be thinking about this particular message. A weak flame is easily extinguished, but a roaring fire is unstoppable. Let's figure out how we can have that roaring fire in our marriages and in our relationships. So we're going to be in the Song of Solomon. Sometimes it's considered a song of songs. It is an awesome, wonderful song that Solomon has prepared for us all about love. Now, I will often contend that this is one of the most overlooked books in the Bible. This is an awesome, awesome book. And I've spent the entire week digging into this particular song all about love. And can I tell you, it has blessed me richly in myself and in my marriage. And that's what I want to convey to you today, is the words from this song, which are so often not looked at and not read about. We had this particular class when I was at school at Bear Valley, and I love what our instructor did. He said, hey, I want you and your spouse, if you're married, to come to this class because I'm going to treat it as a marriage counseling class. It was awesome, and I was blessed because of it. And so I want to encourage you with these words today. Now, how this particular song is laid out is in three different parts, right? Three big chunks to a song. Really, good job, Solomon. You have three verses. Great, right? So part one, you have the dating and courtship part of the relationship, right? In chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 5. And throughout this particular section of text, you'll find all the lovey-dovey language, right? Notice with me, as you see in chapter 1, verse 8, if you don't know, O most beautiful among women, follow in the tracks of the flock and pasture your young goats beside the shepherd's tents. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. What beautiful love language, right? You are a pretty horse, lady. Isn't that awesome? But that was Solomon's way of complimenting her. Now, that must have been an awesome compliment back in the day. I don't know how well it would go over, guys. Maybe don't take too many tips on these pickup lines that he's using. But he does a wonderful job of complimenting her. And why he's complimenting her is because notice back in verse 5 of chapter 1. Notice she starts having these feelings of insecurity. She starts talking about, I am very dark, but lovely. O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not gaze at me. Don't look at me, Solomon, because I am dark. Because the sun has looked upon me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. What she's saying is she's having these feelings of insecurity because she was a field worker. And she's starting to wonder to herself, who am I? Look at the very end of verse 7. For why should I be like one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions? Who am I to marry a king? She's starting to have these feelings of insecurity. She's starting to say, I've been having to work out in the fields. I've really let myself go, and I'm not worthy to be your spouse. You know, when we were all dating our future spouses, we had those same feelings of insecurities. Ladies, you probably had those feelings of insecurities of thinking to yourself, I'm not that beautiful. I'm not worthy to be marrying this man. All the while, the man is on the other side saying, whoa, I'm out kicking my coverage by a long shot. I am so thankful. And so guys, that's why we spent so much time complimenting our future spouse and saying how beautiful you are, how wonderful you are, how amazing you are, how lovely you are, how gorgeous you are. That's what this dating and courtship relationship was about with Solomon and his future bride, was she felt insecure and he spent a lot of time giving this lovey-dovey language. And as you see throughout this first part, eventually she starts to realize, I am this beautiful woman. I do get to be his bride, and I'm thankful for that. And then we get into the wedding and honeymoon portion, right? In chapter 3, verse 6, verse through chapter 5, verse 1, we have this wonderful wedding scene. Notice in chapter 3, verse 6 and following, it is Solomon arriving to his wedding day. Right, he's coming in this beautiful carriage that it seems like he made. Now, isn't it interesting that women, when they show up to the wedding, they get the full-on cool stuff and everything, and us guys are already standing down there? Back in the day, it must have been the guys who got to show up in this cool carriage, or maybe it was just Solomon. But we see her so excited to say, hey, look, O daughters of Jerusalem, here comes my future husband. Right? And notice we see that it's the wedding day in chapter 3, verse 11. Go out, O daughters of Zion, and look upon King Solomon with the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, on the day of the gladness of his heart. The big day. And throughout this time, we see them talking about how beautiful they are and how wonderful they are, and they're really excited about this day. They start remembering what captivated them and how they've gotten to this point. And then as you go throughout, you find that they have this time where they have their honeymoon stage. And we're not going to talk about that, but they have this honeymoon stage, and that leads you into the last part of this outline, the post-honeymoon, right? Notice in chapter 5, verse 2, throughout the rest of this song, we have this moment where all of a sudden the bride goes into this dream, right? Notice chapter 5, verse 2, I slept, but my heart was awake. We've had those moments where we fall asleep and we don't feel like we're asleep because our mind is just racing. That's what's happening with her. She's having this wild dream, this vivid dream where she hears a sound. Her beloved is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one. My head is wet with dew, my locks with drops of the night. Now, there's a lot of questions that arise when you start to read that part of the song because you're wondering, well, why wasn't the husband already there? Now, as we know, throughout marriage, real life happens. And sometimes, especially when I was first in my first year of marriage with Heather, that I worked on a farm. And so working on a farm, we spent a lot of nights baling alfalfa hay because that was the only time in the dry, arid climate of Oklahoma you could go out and find enough humidity to get that alfalfa to bind together. And so I would spend numerous nights away from her. Maybe that's what's happening here with Solomon. Maybe he is spending a long time out in working and trying to get things accomplished. And so now he's coming back to his bride. But yet, notice what happens. I had put off my garment. How could I put it back on? I had bathed my feet. How could I soil them again? That was a common practice back then, was before you got in bed, you would wash your feet. That way you didn't get your sheets all dirty, right? And so she's having these questioning moments where, do I really want to get up? Now, remember the previous chapters we had just talked about, where they're talking about, ooh, how lucky I am, how much I love you. I can't wait for our wedding day. You're so beautiful. Thank you so much. You're actually very beautiful. And they're having these moments. And now we get to the post-honeymoon phase where it's like, I don't know what he's been doing all night. Do I really want to get up and let him in? Do I really want to? I don't have the energy tonight. I don't feel like talking about things. I don't feel like figuring out whatever he's been doing all night. I've already taken my robe off. I've already washed my feet. Good riddance. Husbands and wives, we have those moments, don't we? Where there's some times where we think, I don't even want to go into the bedroom tonight because I don't even want to have to talk about the issues we have. It's not worth it. I don't want to deal with that amount of time. I just don't want to even have to deal with that. See, I love that we get to see this. I love that we get to witness this in this particular marriage. Yes, there's all this wonderful, lovey-dovey, awesome language that we need to emulate, but we also need to see this part in a marriage, especially with our culture today where all we see on social media is the perfect parts of people's lives. See, now we're getting to see the not-so-perfect part to this marriage. They had problems. They had issues. And notice what happens after that. All of a sudden, she realizes, oh no, I need to go open the door, and guess where Solomon isn't? He's no longer there. He had gone away. And so now she's scouring the town. She's asking the watchman, have you seen where my husband went to? I want to find him, right? She'd realized she had made a mistake. And so she's going out to find him. She's yelling at the, or adjuring, as it says, the daughters of Jerusalem. Hey, if you find my beloved, will you tell him I am sick with love? I just realized I messed up and I need to go and find him. Verse 9, what is your beloved more than another beloved? Oh, most beautiful among women, what is your beloved more than another beloved that you thus adjure us? Why is he so important that you're coming out to us and wanting us to go and find him? And this is, if I can encourage you with a great marriage help tactic, look at the following verses. In verses 10 through 16 of chapter 5, those questions by the daughters of Jerusalem send this bride into a moment of reminiscing about her husband. She starts remembering him. Notice the language as she's talking and describing her beautiful, handsome husband. She's remembering how awesome he is, how strong he is. And can I encourage you with this? One of the best remedies that we can have when we're going through problems with our spouse is to reminisce, to think about the good qualities. Because sometimes we get so angry and we start having resentment build up, and all of a sudden we start to think, you know, it's not even worth it. But I want you to remember those vows, those I do's, the promises that you made that, hey, I'm going to love you no matter what. Whatever life throws at us, I promise to love you and cherish you and respect you and honor you. I want you to reminisce. I want you to think about the flirting y'all used to do, the dating y'all used to do, and hopefully y'all will still do those things. But when problems in paradise arose and she had realized, oh no, he had gone away, she started remembering the good parts. She started remembering the love that she originally had for him. And as it goes throughout, they find each other. There is again this wonderful lovey-dovey language happening again. You'll also see in chapter 6, verse 3, this repeated phrase of, I am my beloved and my beloved is mine. We're one flesh, in other words. He is mine and I am his. That's what a marital relationship is. We are each other's. We are one flesh. And that's going to lead us to the text we're going to really dive into today. And we're going to be talking about the value of true love and how amazing true love is. And that is the entire purpose of this song. And it comes near the very end. Because sometimes it takes us a while to really figure out what the value of this love is. It may take you a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years to figure it out. But once you figure this out, you will be changed forever. Notice in these verses, as Joshua read for us earlier, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy is fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. The first thing I want you to notice about this is that true love is permanent. You think about it. We wear rings in our culture today to symbolize the unending love that we have for our spouse. See, that's an outward show of my love that I have. What she is wanting her husband to have for her is not only an outward love with the seal upon his arm, but the inward seal. The idea of that seal is back in the day, kings would have signets, and these would be like imprints that would say that this is mine, right? And so what she is saying is, I want you to imprint upon your heart me. I want us to have that kind of love. I want you to make sure this is permanent and it's not going anywhere. Yes, I want people to be able to see it from the outside, but more importantly, I want you to know it on the inside. True love is permanent love. True love fights things out. True love figures things out. True love is going to remember those I do's and say, hey, we need to work on these. Hey, we're starting to struggle here. Let's figure things out. Because true love is a permanent love. Now notice what he does in the very next part of this verse. He starts with the word for. He's going to let you know why true love is so important and how it is so permanent and why it should be a permanent place and have a permanent place in our heart. Notice, number one, love is as strong as death. Well, that seems like a weird phrase. And it is, because sometimes we don't think about it this way, right? Love, true love is irresistible. Now, guys and gals, if you're married now, I bet you can remember the time you noticed your future spouse and you started dating, and all of a sudden it was like, this is the one. That's what this is talking about. See, I don't know how many of you in here, but I'm pretty sure everyone in here at some day, and I hope it's way down the road, is going to die because death is irresistible. We can't cheat death, right? It's going to happen to everybody. The same thing happens with true love. It's going to find you, right? And once it does, it's irresistible. We want to be in that relationship. We want to be with that person. Because it's as irresistible as death. Notice what he says next, and notice how this kind of coincides with each other. Also, remember back when he was saying, or she was saying, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine, right? We're one flesh. That's why he talks about here, or she talks about here, how jealousy is as fierce as the grave. True love is a jealous love. Now, please don't think of this jealousy as the same one you find in Galatians 5 with one of the deeds of the flesh. This is a different jealousy. This is the same jealousy that God has for his people from Exodus chapter 20. And as you'll see throughout scripture, God has a jealous love. Why? Because his people are his people. He doesn't want his people showing affection towards other little g gods. He doesn't want his people to have an adulterous relationship with the world. That's the type of love we have in our marriages, and we should have in our marriages. We should covet the time that our spouse has for us. We should spend as much time as we possibly can because there is jealous love in marriage. Spouses, don't you despise when your husband or wife has to spend so much extra time at work. Why? Because that's that jealous love. I want their time. I want to be with them. And true love has that. And there's nothing wrong with it because we love each other so much. My beloved is mine and I am hers. And we want to make sure we understand that and we use our time and our efforts wisely. Because we should understand that we are one flesh and we need to be around each other. Next, he talks about how true love is passionate, or she talks about how true love is passionate. It's flashes. Love's flashes are a flash of fire, the very flame of the Lord. True love has passion to it. We love our spouses. We want our spouses. We want to better our relationships. And sometimes Like we were talking about earlier, right? Sometimes we get down to that little single candle flame. We don't want that. We want the big bonfire. Think about the love that God has for his people, right? Think about how much we deserve to have our love blown out by all this different stuff that we did throughout generation after generation, right? Think about through the entire Old Testament how much you would think the flame of the love that God has for his people should have gone out. How horrible they were, but yet that love burned. That love was great. That love was so great, he was still willing to offer his son as a sacrifice for us. Do we have that kind of love for our spouse? That passionate love. That love that says, I'm going to do everything I possibly can for you. Notice, once you have that passionate, roaring flame love, verse 7, many waters cannot quench love, neither can love can floods drown it. I love this part, because this part tells me that whatever this life throws at me, if I have true love, nothing is getting in the way. No sort of financial crisis that we come into, no sort of family crisis that we come into, no sort of trial that life throws at me can quench the love that we have together. Because true love is unquenchable. It'll never get flooded. No matter what this world throws at us, our love will stand. And oftentimes I hear that between spouses, and I love to hear that, where they say, hey, I love doing life with you. No matter what life throws at us, we have done it together. That's what true love's about. And then notice at the end of verse 7, he says, if a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. Because true love is priceless. I can't offer anything for it. I can't pay to have true love. And even trying to do that, notice it says it will be despised. I want you to also notice throughout this, true love doesn't just come without any effort. Because true love happens with purpose. There has to be intention behind it. There has to be us waking up with a purpose saying, today I am going to make my marriage better. Today I'm going to make my relationships with my friends better. Today I'm going to make relationships with my kids better, right? That doesn't just happen by chance. It happens with purpose. And we want to make sure that as we go throughout our marriages, that we are being purposeful. You want to have those moments like you see in chapters 1, verse 1 through chapter 3. Where we're flirting with our spouses, where we're dating our spouses, where we're thinking about our spouses. We're being intentional in our marriage. We're developing this passion for them. I want us to remember that true love happens with purpose. We have to be intentional in our relationships. And as we close today, I want to again encourage you, don't let your I do's become I don'ts. Remember those vows that you made to your spouse. Don't let the world try to get in the way. Oftentimes, too many couples let the world interfere. Don't. Build your relationship together. And can I say, more importantly, build your relationship with God. And as you two grow closer to him, y'all will grow closer to each other. And you won't let those I do's become I don'ts. Now again, you can see hopefully that this same principle applies to even our relationships with friends, our relationships with our Christian brothers and sisters. We want to make sure that we develop these relationships and this love for one another. Now maybe you are here this morning and there have been some times in your marriage where you have struggled, where your I do's have turned into I don'ts. I want to encourage you to get help. I want to encourage you to seek help. I would love to make myself available to you. If I can sit down with you and encourage one another, this is one of my favorite things to think about is marriage. Maybe it's because in my life I was never privy to witness wonderful marriages. And so Heather and I have built a life where we want to focus on marriage. And I want others to focus on it as well. If you would like counseling, I would encourage you to seek me or one of our other ministers to help you and to sit down with you. If you have any other need, whether today is the day you want to become a Christian and have your sins washed away in baptism, we would love for that day to be today. We ask that if you have any need this morning, you come while we stand and sing the song of invitation.